Another thing for you to keep in your mind and your thinking is this fact. All pain can be managed these days. And oftentimes, with the miracle drugs that they have today, even though the patient is dying and appears to be in a great deal of pain, sometimes they can't really feel it. It will be very difficult for us to comfort a person without having some understanding of pain. First, realize that we're told that all pain can be managed, but by that we're able to be so bold as to suggest that if a doctor is telling us that there's nothing that can be done about the pain, then we are serving the patient best by telling them or suggesting that they get another doctor's opinion. So know this, all pain can be managed. But also remember that the times the choice is not to manage it to such a degree that the brother loses contact with reality. They could dope him up so much that in the last days they wouldn't even be able to respond to you, and I don't think you'd want that either. So he might have to live with some pain or less pain. But whatever you do, don't deny the pain. This is important for us to learn. We never want to be in a position where we're denying their pain. If they have pain, then believe them and move on to comfort them accordingly. Don't be like some who believe that pain is all in the mind. There are some groups out there like that. I remember hearing about one who thought pain was only mental. I think they were Christian Science advocates. He was trying to convince another person of the fact that of that fact when the chair he was rocking on landed on a cat's tail. The poor feline let go of a squeal and darted across the room. His tail was slightly bent for some reason. The doctrine questioned whether the doctrine questioning brother calmly asked his no pain theologian, well, I guess that was all in his mind. So don't deny pain. Pray about it. Talk to the doctors about it and minister to it. But by all means, don't blame the devil for it. He doesn't do everything. Some of the things are part of living. Brothers lay claim on this fact, Satan doesn't make us sick. The fall of man brought about the sickness as we, as well as the rest of the creation, wait until the plan is finished. Read Romans 8. Our love makes room for their present and future pain. It comforts them. It comforts when we have to dig deep into our reserves and fight back our tears of sorrow and even hold back our anger that they should not need to suffer pain and discomfort. You'll not have the answers always, but you will have the assurance that you're giving them all the comfort that you can. Leave them with all you can. I truly hope that in my time with a loved one, I will be able to leave something with him which will give him comfort when I leave the bedside scene. To move beyond that expectation is to accept the challenge of bringing your loved one to the point where he can make a choice to fight the good fight and learn as many lessons of suffering as he can. Don't expect all miracles. Just remember, you are there because you're of your caring love. Just pray that you'll be able to help him to see that. Some will actually grow during their sessions of pain and disappointment. Time of this writing, I was fortunate to have such a man in my congregation. He was such a beautiful man. He had he's had a bout with prostate cancer and other complications. At the present time, he's dealing with lung cancer. And at the time of this writing, he has succumbed to it and he has died. He never complained. In fact, he was sincerely embarrassed when he found out the whole church was praying for him. He was only a man, but really did he show disappointment and grief. One day I met him and his lovely little wife at the door of the church. And it was obvious his wife was concerned. I hugged her and asked, "You guys okay?" She responded, "Ask him." I did, and he told me that he found out he has lung cancer. He looked me in the eye and said, "I'll make it." He was fully open to my ministry, not only of comfort, but one that helps him to to make the most out of all his trials. I wrote him one of my little prayer notes, and he responded this way. Pastor, that's the first time any pastor has written me a love note. Doesn't that say something to you? Before we finish this book, I hope that you become a man of God who can bring them not only to a disposition of being comforted by an acceptance which is based upon God's love and acceptance, but a sincere desire to minister to people. We all know that heaven is there and it will be great. But when you're in the process of dying, all of a sudden you would like to put it off for a while if you could. I think we would all agree on that. Don't make unfair comparisons. Another thing we must be careful of is making comparisons between other similar situations and the one our loved one is in. By doing so, we run the danger of giving false hope and expectations. Perhaps one person had more pain. Maybe one recovered. And in any case, we might make a very, very uneducated guesses and muddy the water. I know of one example when the pastor says, sure, you'll recover. A former parishioner had the same prognosis and is now healthy and as strong as ever. The person was dead in 2 weeks and never had a chance to prepare himself because he believed it. Let's add to that the advice that the patient shouldn't compare either. Don't compare yourself with others in similar situations. Your own way is the best way for you. On another hand, you may have the experiences which have given you understanding which will help you. Scripture leaves room for that in 2 Corinthians 1:4, who comfort us in tribulation that we may be able to comfort those, comfort them which are in trouble by the comfort with which we are comforted by God. There's a lot there, isn't it? Let them go through it. Leave them something that's meaningful. I love this little illustration. A mountain climber was holding a group of folks spellbound as he shared how he could scale impossible heights and angles. And one of the onlookers says, what happens if you're coming down a mountain and find yourself running out of time? You can't go up or down, and it's getting dark. With great confidence, as one who would expect from such an adventure, he responded, I look for a crevice in the rock, and then I would swing myself into it and turn around with my back to the cliff and hammer some spikes in on each side. Then I would take my rope and tie myself in. And of course, I'm standing up, so it's hard to sleep, but I know that if I stay there in the darkness, the light will come and I'll be able to climb down and safely in the morning. The obvious lesson is I wait, and comfort is that if I wait, comfort will come with the light and to lead us home safely. That's my task. I'm a comforter, a caregiver, a shepherd. We want to help the process as we walk our loved ones home. Begin to search for those words. Here's a couple. 1 Peter 5:7, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. God gets into comforting us the way our mom used to. Isaiah 66:13, as one whom his mother comforted, so will I comfort you, and you shall be comforted. David let the word minister to him, for they were words from his shepherd life. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art comforting, for thou shalt comfort me. Genesis 37:35, all and all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted, and he said, for I will go down to the grave unto my son mourning. Thus his father wept. See, comfort, receiving comfort. Jeremiah 8:18, when I would comfort myself against sorrow, my heart was faint within me. A lot of things written about comfort. Let's look at the A. The C is comfort. The A is allow. My little poem is, it seems so hard at times to hear the pain in the heart of one so dear. He tries so hard to make it clear. All I can do is shed a tear. No matter what my confusion be, my care always him to share with me. He'll thank me when my visit ends and say, I've been a very good friend, but all I did was allow him to vent. That was enough for him. To him I was heaven sent. 2 Chronicles 6:40 says this, "Now, my God, let I beseech thee, thine eyes be open, and let thine ears be attent unto the prayer that is made in this place." Job went through a few things too. Wonder what went on his mind. I want to let them share their feelings. Isn't it true? I want to be there. I want to let them know. I want to hear it as much as it breaks my heart. You'll note that some of the themes in those verses are repetitive. Some of the words from chapter to chapter. I'm saying the same thing over and over again. Maybe you think you're getting tired of hearing, but I believe in repetition. But I want you to remember that listening and responding with love are worthy to be shouted from the housetops when you care enough to consider your brother. By the way, did you ever hear this? God gave us two ears and one mouth, so He must expect us to listen twice as much as we talk. I'm sure you've heard that before. One of the main reasons for careful listening is that your loved one may have to share some things before he can listen to the things you might want to say to him. Be a patient listener. Loving care causes catharsis, and that word simply implies a purging. When you allow someone to vent his feelings without judging him, you're actually allowing him to purge himself of frequent self-hindering thoughts and angers. Please be sure that you're prepared to receive it. They know how they look. Here's a great piece of advice that would apply to any person who wishes to allow a person to express themselves. You're more than likely to hear a comment or two about how they feel or how they look. My pastor friend who had just finished his chemo treatments told me the following. "Last week when I went to Don's barber shop, I had some bits of hair shaved off. I knew he was a good man and wouldn't make a big deal out of it. But do you know what my youth director did? He had all of his hair shaved off just so that every time he saw it or felt it, he would remember to pray for me. The only thing was I had to explain that to the congregation, and I didn't want them to think he was mocking me." And he looked at me with a tear in his eye and he says, "Wasn't that something?" And that's a quote. It sure was, for it was a perfect example of the type of loving care that will help more than we will ever know. There are many conditions that cause patients to feel conspicuous. Be sensitive. Never draw attention to them. Don't stare at them. Don't stare at their scars. If they can't see out of one eye, don't stare at their eye. If their lip is twitching, don't stare at their lip. Just be as comfortable as you can, but they understand you feel uncomfortable. It may be good for them to talk about things, but they might be very sensitive to your response. Don't ever make fun at their expense. They might laugh with you, but it's going to hurt deeply. Loss of weight and hair and body functions are difficult enough to adapt to. So be kind. Please, don't let this discourage you. I just want you to be prepared for all possibility. However you receive it, with a little fear and hesitation or excitement to get started, just remember, they're worth every bit of loving effort. Love cares. Now for the average visitor, I've got some words for you. I'd like to caution you not to venture too deep into the catharsis experience unless you're well prepared to handle what you hear. Be content not to go beyond the sharing of surface feelings. This might not be as easy as one would think, for you just might hear some things that you didn't expect. And being put on the spot, you might get in over your head before you realize it. Always remember, he's probably having feelings that he's never had before and doesn't realize what he's saying or how it sounds. And the fact is, he don't care. Be careful, though. We all have the capability of coming up with some real bad stuff when the pressure is on. Avoid displaying this look or attitude. "I can't believe your attitude." Don't do that. Just be big enough to forget that you heard it. Treat all things a suffering brother blurts out as extremely confidential. You share with them at all. Do so with a pastor or a chaplain who's qualified and may desire to go a little deeper with him. You're not breaking a confidence when you share something that he privately said to you that someone else might be able to bring him further who's a professional. Remember, love is your motive. Allow them to share very freely. Expect to be surprised and expect to love them anyway. They might even sound blasphemous at times, but they'll get over it. It just might be a matter of letting out some feelings, which they have. That's part of a grieving process anyway. The counselor is trying to locate some feelings and let them get out and maybe let them out of the box so that they're not dominated by them anymore. Your listening is helping them to do that. Job says, "Are not my days few? Cease then. Let me alone, that I may take comfort a little." You know what? Someone says, "You let me alone." You know what you do? You let them alone. Before you speak, listen. Another area which is very important to you is when you find yourself at a loss for words, is don't just share without care. If you tell them of all the wonderful things that are happening in your life, and you think you're cheering him up, but you might be surprised to learn that his nausea is not due to his illness. It isn't fair or caring to make him envious of your fortune, which he is facing when he is facing terminal decisions and feelings. By the way, keep your cheerleading to the football games. Of course, if he asks them, in all probability he's interested. For example, grandmas and grandpas usually want to see their offspring doing well, and it can add new good feelings, new life feelings. You'll be able to discern whether they're bored or are really interested in the response. When they're at times, reading responses may be hard due to the pain factor. There isn't much in this world that is too interesting when you hurt real bad. If pain is noticeable, then hold off for a while. I think it would be good to show your love and consideration by excusing yourself or asking if there's anything you can do to make them more comforting. And at times, just fixing a pillow, adjusting the bed can bring comfort. A little water, a little ice to chew on, wetting their lips, maybe wiping their foreheads, holding their hands, asking if they're warm. There's a lot of things that you can do which show you care and show them you're responsive to their pain and their feeling uncomfortable. You may ask if he wants his nurse to help in any way. Again, don't be shocked if he asks for death or something else which is beyond your power to give. Another situation you might find yourself in is wondering whether your brother can hear you or not. We're told that even if a person is in a coma, he can still hear you. So don't be talking about the wrong things around the bedside. A husband and wife had a deep love, and were not looking forward to separation. They knew that the time would come when one of them was either so much in pain or in a coma that they would be unable to talk. They devised a plan so that they could communicate. Anytime they squeezed each other's hands three times, it meant, "I love you." Prophetically, that time came when he was near to death and nearly unable to respond. She tried to talk to him, but he never opened his eyes. She tried words, no response. Finally, she just held his hand and noticed that he was ever so gently squeezing her hand three times. She began to cry, for he was telling her for the last time, "I love you." My wife and I have established this, and we do it all the time. It's neat. Go ahead, steal it, do it. Share it with your wife. Now, that primary caregiver, well, right from the top, we must admit that the fact that allowing them to release the feelings will be required of you. You may feel at times that you can't take another moment of hearing his cries and not being able to help much. Your bottle of tears will be so full at many times. Only the master will know the whole story. Please try to be patient and still go on. He'll share some feelings with you. Just remember, these days can be good if you allow Jesus to minister to him through you. If he keeps asking you the same questions over and over, refer them to your pastor or your doctor. Above all, remember that no one knows everything, so an I don't know is often in order. I've learned that. Repetition of feelings, complaints, and questions will be tough. Just let them go. But always tell the truth. By telling them the truth, you both know what you must do to make the best of your present situation or his remaining days. All right, you ready for that? And you will probably have to hold back some bad things for a more convenient time to let him be able to trust you. His life will be a lot tougher if he is trying to figure out who he can trust and who he can't. Dr. Brimley, on his video for the Mercy Project, while making a point that terminally ill patients will always tell you their needs, shares that the greatest need is competent compassion. They will share, and you will allow, but they are searching far beyond information. For beyond information is to know that you really do love and care. Pastor, tune in to me again for a moment. We have to start with assumption that in your ministerial preparation, you've learned how to be a listener. If you're not to that point, then I advise you to get with the program. This sounds a little stern, but I believe that your calling is the greatest calling this side of heaven. No job on earth affects the lives of God's children like a pastoral shepherd. 2 Timothy 1:9 says, "Who saved us and called us with a holy calling, not according to our works, but according to His own purpose and grace, which was given in Christ Jesus before the world began." And also 2 Peter 1:10, "Wherefore the rather, brethren, give diligence to make your calling and election sure, for if you do these things, you will never fail." I'm not trying to lay guilt on you, but I believe we will have to give account for our ministries. And I would hate to face the master with the feeling that my ministry was that of a quote-unquote professional pastor. My observation has been that the brother and primary care giver have no idea as to what your role should be, unless they're reading this book. The pastor is one who does care for you, but doesn't get too involved in your deep personal affairs. Many of us have left the opinion that we can't jump into the middle of family matters. Someone says, "Pastor, you're too busy." There are some matters you can get into. Just be careful how deep you get in. It bugs me when people feel that way about us. For I know pastors with congregations half the size of mine don't even have time to care and counsel. I've sat in many waiting rooms in hospitals, and I've rarely seen a pastor waiting all night for a brother to either pull through or to go home. Just last week, I spent the night with a brother's family as he fought for life in intensive care. There was a family there who had an infant in a burn unit. She shared how unusual it was for a pastor to spend a long time with a family. I shared that I thought it was my place. Then she shared how she had gotten over the fact that she and her child had been there for 2 weeks and their pastor hadn't visited once. She then said how glad she was because it showed her how much she needed to lean on God and not man. Well, that thought is important, but I felt ashamed for him, for I know that he should have come at least once, even though maybe it was 50 miles of travel. Time you spend with a family at their most critical times is the best use of your time. When you go through the fire with them, it creates the bond that will last forever. When you sit in love without being antsy or giving them the feeling of guilt that they're imposing on your time, you're doing your best ministry. I've never found a time when I had spent a lot of time at the hospital where God hasn't helped me to preach the word with power on Sunday morning. In fact, the times that I approached the pulpit with unwiped tears in my eyes and a body begging for rest because of dedication to a need were the times when I preached the best. Enter your brother's home with a determination not to leave until you have completed your task, unless you feel God is leading you out because of your lack of spiritual preparation. Those precious times of allowing Him to unburden His life are going to give you a multitude of materials to use in your ministry. He has a story. He needs to tell it. You need to hear it. God, help us to be sensitive to Him at this very important time. Now go on to the next tape to finish this thought.